Welcome to Mind Mastery and Manifestation, the number one podcast helping you rewire your mind to erase fear, unlock your greatest potential, and get the extraordinary relationships, businesses, and lives you've always wanted. We're your hosts, Dan Mendelow
and Sophie Kessler. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Mind Mastery and Manifestation podcast. We are so excited to have you here today. And even more amazing, we have an incredible guest, and I cannot wait to share her with you. I actually met Kirsten at a recent event I attended down in San Diego and was completely magnetized by her energy. When she spoke, it was just like, oh, I've got to talk to this woman. So Kirsten Johnson is actually a life coach, YouTuber, and the author of an upcoming book called The Elephant. And what she does is she does a lot of incredible transformational work with people on overcoming anxiety so that they can actually get rid of the fear and access their true potential. So let's go ahead and give an awesome welcome to Kirsten. Thank you so much for coming on the show with us.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Fantastic. So let's go ahead and give those listening a little bit more of what they should know about you. How did you get to where you are today?
Oh, wow. Okay. I think the way that my story worked, how I learned everything, is I had some trauma in my childhood that I never addressed. And then living with that trauma brought me down the pathway of anxiety disorders and alcohol addiction, which ended in 2009 when I got sober. And that's when I started waking up to, wait a minute, the upward spiral. Right. So the downward spiral to me is getting more consumed with fear. And then the upward spiral is coming out of that, realizing that if I can understand my fear and I could understand my emotions, that I can start to co-create my life and I can change my reality and I can create my world when I'm not living in a survival mode. I can be in a creation mode. And so that switched for me when I was in 2009. And since then, I've gone through all sorts of workshops and retreats and personal development stuff. And the more and more I grow and learn, the more I realize that there's just a few basic things that I think are really helpful to empower people to completely transform their life. For me, it comes down to learning how to work with your nervous system.
Mm, I love that. And for those of you listening, you know that we have spent a lot of time talking about the science of your body, the science of transformation, and really knowing how to actually utilize your nervous system and your brain and your body to change how you're wired. So I love that that's part of the work that you do. And it really shows a lot of the synchronicities behind a lot of this. So what I'd love to just learn a little bit more about is, I know when we talked recently, you mentioned that you just got back from living in, was it Bali?
Yes, Bali.
Amazing. So what was your intent? What was your reason for wanting to go and live in Bali?
Oh, I love that question. Yeah, well, I had surgery on my elbow and my wrist. And after that, I was in a little bit of a funk. And I was feeling like I couldn't work out. I couldn't do yoga. I couldn't cook. And so I was like, well, if I can't do these things, why don't I go not do any of this stuff in the tropics? So I went to Bali on vacation. And luckily, I was in the position where I had the miles for my flight and I had the money. So I was able to go for 5 weeks. And while I was there, I had this really otherworldly experience, this with a palm tree, basically. And it was so weird for me because my background is, I have a master's in statistics. I used to work in analytics for startups in San Francisco, analyzing large data sets and being the head of analytics teams. So I was very logical and like a very well-trained my mind to think logically. But having said that, so one of the things that's the most exciting to me about statistics is that looking for an outlier in a data set, there's usually an interesting story with that outlier. Whichever data piece is a little bit different. And in business, that's led to millions or happy customers or whatever. But in my personal development life, that looked like having this experience with a palm tree. It was so different from anything that I had ever experienced before. But basically, when I would look out at the palm trees, my heart, there was this weird experience with my heart where it was very emotional. It was like I would be struck with intense bliss. And then a couple seconds later, deep grief. And I needed to know what that was about. And I knew, I felt that I was called onto an adventure. And it was such a strong feeling and knowing that I went home, sold everything, and moved to Bali. And to go on this adventure, like, what's happening with my body, my emotions, and these trees? Like, what is this? And the only thing I've ever felt more strongly in my life was the call to leave Bali back to the States. So it's really been tapping, like trusting my intuition, my guidance, the energy inside me, and allowing myself to surrender to that even when my mind doesn't quite understand. And it's been a really wild, fun, amazing ride.
Oh my God, I love that. I didn't even know. So this is exciting for me just as much as I'm sure it is for those of you listening. I'm like, there's a palm tree. Oh God.
Me too. I was like, oh, that's why I explained my math background. I'm like, wait, what?
I love it. And so I get a lot of this, and I think for a lot of people listening, they probably resonate very well with what you're talking about, in the sense that we've reached a certain level of success in our lives because of the ability to, I guess in a way, adapt to societal standards, right? Being able to show up the way that we need to and play by the rules. And oftentimes that leaves us in a place where maybe we're not so fulfilled or happy, but we have everything that we think we're supposed to have, that we think we're supposed to need. And we're kind of sitting there wondering, what the fuck? Right? There's got to be something more. And it sounds like giving yourself permission in that moment, in that time when you went and you really trusted your gut, when you trusted your instinct, it was as if you were giving yourself permission to step into the unknown and trust in something bigger, something so much better than just playing by the rules.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's quite the experience to let go of most of your worldly and material possessions, and then to notice how you feel after that, enduring that, and then trusting the mystery of God, the divine, the energy. The energy in the tree is the same energy that's in us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's people call it God or the universe or whatever, the divine, whatever it's called. But absolutely what I was feeling in the tree is the same thing that I could also feel in a human. And yeah, what's interesting about, if we look at like material possessions and happiness, is that one of the most happiest times of my life was when I first moved to Bali. And I went there with like two suitcases. I didn't have stuff. I had a whole different experience of life. I had my spirituality. I had my friends and my connection there. And so it's not the material things. Obviously, we know this, but to really experience that on a very, very real level, it's not what we have. It's who we are. It's how we are.
I love that you said that. This is a big piece that we've definitely spent a lot of time talking around and about. So let's go a little deeper into this. Because I think that this is something that we touched a little bit on at the event that you and I were at around who we are, right? Who we believe we are, who we show up as. Let's go a little bit deeper, because I think this is something that a lot of people tend to struggle with, right? There's that internal conflict for a lot of times. And it's really this concept of, when we were at this event, it was this concept of, we wear masks and we show up one way, but we're really another way. And when we sat down and had a conversation, it was you and I, and there were two other people that we were sitting down with. And we got into a very interesting conversation around how much more it is than just wearing one mask. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in saying that, just a little bit of a recap, we started talking about how with the masks, it's not that we just wear one. It's this idea that we actually have multiple, and that giving ourselves permission, and I say that very intentionally, giving ourselves permission to really understand that we are all of these masks and none of them all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think at least from my experience and with the people that I coach one-on-one, what I've seen is that they become, the more we awaken, the less we need them or use them, or the less tightly affixed they become to us in our day-to-day experience of life. Like, there are some areas where I still want to get things right and then do them really well, but I no longer am like clenched to the mask of perfectionism because I'm afraid that you might find out who I am and then reject me. I'm not running from my shame anymore. I'm not clenching these masks over my identity. I'm not clenching like an identity as hardcore as I used to be. I don't think that it all, you know, it goes away. We're still, you know, humans with the mind, our human minds and our psyches and stuff. But I think once, and I've seen this a lot, not just for myself, but people that I've worked with either in masterminds or like coaching, once we have met our deepest pain, the need for the masks aren't there.
Mm.
If I can embrace my shame, I don't need to grab a mask because I don't need to pretend to be somebody else to try to get something from you because I know my inherent worth. And I might, in certain social situations, do a little bit of a shape shift, right? And toss on a mask here or there to, like, however it's going to work and different parts of my personality come up. But for me, it's even the manifesting. Because step one in spirituality for me was, oh, look, I have power in my mind. I can create what I want. Look at this. I thought about this and this person appeared. I wrote down I wanted this much money and it appeared. Or whatever. Like, I have power. And then step two was, oh my God, like, running into my pain. Stop running and trying to create stuff, running away from my pain and using spirituality as a way to mask my emotions. But now I'm going into my pain and feeling my pain. And then that's a whole grieving period. And then the step three is consciously creating without running. And I think when, like, from that place, there isn't the need for the masks that there is in the first phase. For me, there might be more phases. I'm just looking at my own experience and the people that I've worked with and talked with. But the need to hide my persona or all these masks isn't there when we're not running from something. Mm-hmm. I no longer think that there's something wrong with me or something broken inside my head, which I lived for a long time without belief. The shame piece, the toxic shame. And in that case, I did need masks. I couldn't risk you finding out who I really am. And then what if you reject me? Then it's true. I'm unlovable.
And I think from the conversation...
which isn't true, yeah, right?
Absolutely. And one of the things that really struck me when we were talking, gosh, it's been almost 2 weeks now, at the event was the fact that the majority of the reasons why we wear these masks is because of the elusive idea that we're not lovable. And so we have to put all these things on to try to show people that we are. But it's not necessarily the external factor of other people loving us. It actually starts from the belief in ourselves of us loving and accepting ourselves, not as being perfect or flawless, but an understanding that this is who we are and appreciating and loving that as whole, instead of running or hiding or denying or suppressing pieces of us. And when we get to that place where, as you mentioned, you're no longer running from yourself, right? You're no longer trying to run from your fear, yeah, or your pain, but you're in a place where you're like, this is me. This is me, the real, the raw, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
And I'm choosing to love and accept that instead of run from it. And from this place, it's almost like we start to take off these weighted chains that we've been trying to run with, start to see those pieces as beautiful and find the gifts in them. And in finding those gifts, we're able to start utilizing them, like you mentioned, to really be able to create and attract what we want to experience, because we're no longer spending so much energy trying to avoid something, but that energy's now been freed up to use at an elevated frequency so we can then attract things that are equal to the emotional state that we really want to experience life at.
Exactly. And it's an interesting analogy and picture that I'll draw on your mind really quick. But if I put whipped cream on a piece of shit and tell you that it smells good, it's no. And that's like saying, like, that's like, I think at the beginning of manifesting, it's like, oh, or as Tony Robbins says, there's no weeds in my garden. No, there's weeds. No, it's a piece of shit. Like, you decorated it, but like, I don't want that. So if I'm going to pretend that I feel good or that I love myself when I don't, there's still the underlining crap that needs to be cleared out. It's not, the vibration isn't, we're not attracting, you know, we're not manifesting because there's actually an underlining vibration that needs to be cleaned out. The old emotions that are trapped in us. It's the whipped cream on shit. We can't just try to spiritually bypass everything. And then if we're wondering why our life isn't unfolding the way we want, well, maybe there's something deeper that is called, that wants to be healed, and then things will flow.
Yes. best analogy ever.
Not sweet. I'm not smelling it, but you can see it. Like, I can see it. I couldn't see it before. I couldn't see it when I was in it. But if I look back at old pictures of myself, or if I just look at people, pictures online, you could see it. And I could see, you could see it in people's faces. The mask, the fake smile over the trauma, you know, and it's just, I feel like it's just one of the stages of growth. I don't know that I'm pouring whipped cream on shit. I think that I can do positive thinking and that's going to work. And that actually is a mask of its own, the spiritual bypass mask. And to me, that's like, that's the invisible mask. You don't even know you have it on because you think you're with God. You think you're like doing all the spiritual stuff, but really it's the ego's come in the back door and it's getting significance through and likes online or whatever through spirituality, which is, how is that different than through physical material stuff? So to me, that was the trickiest mask. And so when I saw that I was wearing that one, I was like, oh my God, I'm still trying to get love. But now I'm doing it. Hey, look at me in Thailand with the Buddha behind me. Oh, I'm still trying to show you I'm good enough, but I'm using my spirituality to do it. And I can't see it because I think I'm like enlightened or whatever.
I think we talked about this a little bit last time and I'm bringing it up because it was gold. Around how a lot of times, especially in the Western world, we're so achievement oriented and we're conditioned from a very early age that in order to be lovable or worthy of love or to get any kind of acknowledgement, you need to achieve something. And the conversation that we had was around even at like the personal development level, right? Well, people are saying they get to this place of like, oh, I'm not achievement oriented, but look at me, I'm meditating more than you, right? I'm doing all of this. It's always about something else. And it's recognizing and realizing that that doesn't mean anything. It's no longer about the individual, but it's about the collective whole. And I think when you get to that place where it's not about me or you or being better than anyone else or less than or whatever it is, it's understanding that we are all actually equal. And it's not about competing with each other, but it's about getting to the place where you really start to tap into a part of yourself that you can align with the whole of who you are. And instead of saying, I have to do all of this in order to be that, you realize I am already all of that. And that's what allows me to do all of this.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That was beautiful. That just is like, hits my soul.
Love it.
Love yeah, it. Because there's this thing that happened when I first moved to Bali, I was having a great time, but I was also in a bit of a spiritual addiction, let's call it that, right? Where I was in the delusion that after this specific workshop, the next workshop, then I was going to be something happy, better, whole, healed, you know, lovable, whatever. I didn't know that I believed I was unlovable at that time, but I was basically using the spirituality like that I'm going to read this book and then I'm going to be okay. Or I'm going to be happy after I do this Vipassana in Thailand, or I'm going to go to India and do this workshop and then I'm going to be good. Oh, I didn't look at this aspect yet. Once I do this, I still needed something in order to be okay, which is the same thing as I need the house, the car, the wife, the kid, the fence. And in spirituality, it's the book, the workshop, the next course, or I'm going to walk on coals again, hot coals, or I'm going to have my inner child scream or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And so that delusion that there is some time in the future that then I'm going to be okay, I think that's like the great human like dilemma, like believing that there's something in the future that is going to make me okay now, or that I'll be okay now in the future now. But the reality then is like, and I love Eckhart Tolle says this, my favorite book is Power of Now, because it just changed my mind, like transformed my mind. But he says like in Power of Now, it's impossible to have a problem. Like we can think, we can make up a problem in our mind, but there's no problem ever possible in the now. In the now, we either have a situation to accept or deal with or whatever, but problems are a manifestation of the mind. And we can be addicted to having a problem too. But then there's this whole like, I don't know. I mean, I think that the way that the mind is set up is that we always think that the future is going to be this different thing. And then so the journey is about, well, the journey exactly is about being in the now. No, I am enough now. No, I'm good now. Can I have joy today? Like, can I be going towards my goal, but also enjoying the process of getting there? I mean, I get tripped up on that still too. Like I think, oh, well, once I have my book is with the beta readers right now, well, once my book is published, then whatever. So I noticed that my thinking will still go there, right? I still have the human mind. I'm definitely not enlightened, but I can see it now because I've seen it. My awareness has caught it over and over and over again, that I have a little bit of a chance to remember in the day, oh wait, reel it back, let's have fun today.
Oh, I love this. I'm like thinking how deep we want to go here. And it really is bringing up something surreal in a sense for a lot of people. And this is kind of where we get into the world of quantum. In really understanding that, that all that we really are is right now, but we have this elusive idea. It's almost like this delusional sense that right now is constructed by the evidence that I'm continuing to bring back from my past experiences. which is why I'm wondering, why do I keep behaving the same way? Why am I keep feeling the same way when you're pulling from all the evidence of the past to recreate where you currently are because you have fear or anger or hurt or whatever those lower level energy emotions are that are stuck in your system that you're denying or suppressing or trying to avoid or run from. And are on the opposite, like you just mentioned, when we're so focused on the future that we're not in the present moment because we're creating in our mind and experiencing in our mind, and we're literally, and Dan and I have talked about this quite a bit, we're literally telling our brain and our body when we're thinking and we're creating an image in our mind that that is actually happening, because your brain does not know the difference behind what is something that you are imagining and what is actually really happening. And so when you are so focused on something going terribly wrong and you're worrying about it and stressing about it and creating that problem in your mind about what they're going to think or how they're going to feel, your body is reacting and responding to that like it is currently happening. And you are literally turning on different genes and rewiring your mind to that experience. And what's happening at the level, and this is where it gets so freaking cool, is then you are creating that vibrational frequency within yourself and you will attract that experience. That is where the science comes in behind this. And that is where you have to understand that it's being able to, in a way, literally detach yourself from the past and from the future so that you can fully be present and accept, like you mentioned, accept the unknown. Because if you can plan it, it's not the unknown, it's coming from something from the past. And then you're only recreating what you've already experienced. But if it's unknown, then that's where you're truly opening yourself up to possibility and to potential. And it's really more so about getting into this present moment where it's not about when something happens or if something happens. It's about you creating from inside yourself the emotional frequency, the vibrational frequency of the emotion you want to experience, and literally creating the neurological wiring and turning on those genes so that you start to actually vibrate at that level and you begin to attract an experience equal to or greater than that frequency.
Totally. I have the chills. I'm like, yeah, I love this. Yeah. And for me, the challenge is remembering that, that every day, because I can get lost in the movie of life very, very easily. So remembering, and like my latest like joke on it is that we're a soul inside a body on a rock flying through space. Can I remember who I am? Like, that's it. I just need to like meditate and remember. And what I also want to say is that there are absolutely, so there's the creating, but there's a surrendering piece too. So the way I see it, my belief is that we're all God, right? There's an energy inside all of our soul. There's energy inside us. We're all connected. And if I get out of the mind a little bit and drop a little lower or a little higher frequency, I guess, but by meditating, dropping out of the thoughts, detaching from them, I can have access to something else. So a deeper wisdom, and it's not so much, I used to think of it as I was being guided, but the guide, I am the guide. Like the tree is the guide. You are the guide. Like we are the guide. Like, so I'm not being guided like a man is telling me what to do in the sky, right? Like it's not, I don't see it that way. Mm-hmm. Kind of how my mind thinks about it, right? Because the mind, it's weird to think about some of this. It's a paradox. The mind can't really understand. It's out of the scope of our thinking to really understand what's going on on a deeper level. But I can understand my experience. And as coming from being a statistician, I started having all these wild experiences, these outliers. And then I started lining up these outliers like a good data analyst would do. And I was like, what's going on here? And what I noticed is that, and what my life has been like for the past several years, is surrendering to the deeper wisdom inside me and being on that roller coaster, being on that ride and seeing where it takes me. And it is effortless. Well, the efforting comes from my emotions and having them like letting go of what my personality or what my mind wants to do and surrendering to that deeper wisdom. But that deeper wisdom, like it just brings me the people and the experiences and the world, like everything just works. It just flows. And so if I can like get my mind on board by letting go my ideas and go with that flow, like it just works out. It just like in ways that are remarkable. And just to make it not abstract, we were just talking about before the podcast about how I'm doing a TED talk soon. Well, okay, so how did that happen? Like I was guided to that stage. I've been guided to that stage. I 6 years ago when I first realized that, I was a speaker because the way I feel in my body when I speak, I imagined that I would do a TED talk one day. But that was from an arrogance of course I'll be on stage, you know, but it wasn't because I had an idea worth sharing yet, which is what the stage is actually about, right? Oh, it's about giving. It's not about look at me. It's about what I have to offer, right? So it took me a while to get let go of the spiritual ego more so. So I came here and I came to a Move America to speak about the long-term effects of ignoring sexual trauma, specifically childhood sexual abuse, because that PTSD, living with that PTSD ignored, will lead to addictions. It will lead to anxiety disorders, depression, suicide attempts, eating disorders, all these sort of symptoms of this deeper buried trauma in the nervous system. And so I knew I was going to come here and talk about that. And then I was like, oh, it's going to be at schools. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to talk at San Diego State. I just knew this. I didn't think I want to. It came to me. You are going to talk about this. Like a knowing. And then it was like, you're going to talk at San Diego State about this. And I was like, okay, well, I better go to the college and let them know I'm here. You know, like, what do I do? I go and I like hang out at Starbucks on campus. I'm looking around at the students. I'm like, all right, okay, well, like these people were all born after I finished high school. So like, what are they doing? What are the kids doing these days? And I'm checking them out and start Googling. And I was like, oh, they have a women's center. And so I go to the women's center and that's where they hire the speakers to talk about mental illness and specifically sexual assault prevention and awareness. So I was like, hey, I'm a speaker for sexual assault prevention and awareness. Who hires the speakers here? Because I just know I'm supposed to speak about it. And they're like, oh, well, we only hire like celebrities and people who are known in the news, and we've already hired our speakers for this year. And I was like, huh, that's weird. I know I'm going to talk here about that. So why did I get a no? I didn't say I want to leave Bali and go talk to, you know, like I'm following the flow. Mm. And so then I go home and I'm like, that's really weird because I know I'm going to do this, but why did they just like, what is that? And then I was like, oh, maybe they have a TED talk. So, you know, maybe I'm thinking the wrong way to get to the goal, right? Because I don't know the how, right? I'm just trying to fumble. So I Google San Diego State TED talk and the deadline's in 2 days to apply. I was like, oh, this is it. So then I apply and then I was like, make them a video. Like I just had this, like, this is how you're going to do it. It just came. So I go to their campus, I make them a video and I submit it. They write me back right away. They're like, not only do we want you to do this and to talk about what I knew I was going to talk about there. So the nervous system meant I'm going to teach them about mindfulness stuff, but to talk about untreated sexual trauma and anxiety disorders and addiction, I am going to do what I knew I was going to do there. But they said, not only did we love your application so much and it's such a good fit, but we've required everyone else to resubmit with a video. So the way that I was guided to even approach them changed the way that they now require everybody else. So nobody else found out for a month if they were going to speak or not because they had to reapply. And that wasn't me. That was, and I'm like, whoa, when I let go and I surrender to the deeper knowing, I'm on this wild ride where it's just working out. Like the doors are just open and I'm just flowing through them when I go on this journey. And so for me, that is more interesting than deciding in Kirsten's brain, oh, I'm going to be significant or important in this way and I'm going to go achieve it. I'm like, okay, that's one way to live. And that's the obvious like way with, as an American, like go achieve. Or I can let go and trust the wisdom inside me and see where that adventure takes. And I love the mystery. I love just knowing and going and flowing. And all the mentors have appeared. Everyone, I mean, since then, I mean, I can go on and on and on about like these evidence of this bigger mystery, but I'll leave it there because I think you get the point with that. And I can talk for hours about this and I don't want to
I love it.
Ramble too much. I just love being in the mystery. And that was the same thing with Bali and the tree and the answer to what was going on with that tree. That's what Elephant's about. That's what my book is about. Because it was just, it kept happening and happening and happening. The doors are opening. I just kind of know, go this way. And then all the doors open. And I'm just like, wow, look at this. This is so fun. And I just got to let go of my fear along the way, which means to me, I mean, the point of life I see, I'm here for my soul to evolve. Like that's what's happening. Like I'm growing and developing and like shedding the fear and shedding what's not me, shedding the shame. And so when I flow on this mysterious ride, what the way to flow through it is to let go of all the stuff that's not me. So I burn through all my old ideas, my masks and everything in order to have this flow. Otherwise I'm clogged. I'm like constipated and I can't flow.
I love all the shit analogies.
I'm doing some crappy analogies today.
Oh, you're so punny. I love it. Chills. Not very often am I left speechless. And I think a big part of that is just, it's a knowingness. And I think what holds most people back is their fear of the unknown. And it's giving yourself permission to, like you mentioned, to love to fall in love with the mystery of the unknown. Yeah. And instead of trying to control how we think it needs to happen, you give yourself permission to just be and just flow with it. And I think there's a lot of misconception around that. We won't get too deep into it because that's a whole other topic. But it's really getting to that place where, you know what, I'm letting go of control. I trust that this is going to happen. And I know that what needs to happen in order for this to happen is I need to become and step into that part of me where I am, like, I'm no longer attached. And when I'm no longer attached, there's so much more room for something else to come in.
Totally. I love this. My body is like, and I didn't think of it as falling in love with the unknown, but that's actually, and this is coming from, by the way, I just want to say this for anyone who's listening and is struggling with anxiety, or it's a process, right? So where I came from in 2009, when I got sober, I had every anxiety disorder. I think it's just untreated trauma. When I've looked back a little further, I realized, no, it was PTSD from the sexual trauma when I was a kid. But I was diagnosed with every anxiety disorder, social anxiety, generalized anxiety. I had a freeway phobia. I didn't drive on the freeway for 3.5 years. Now I'm on a solo road trip across the US. Fear of public speaking. You know, I changed majors in college to avoid public speaking, actually going to a college to speak on a big stage, right? So it's like I was on the downward spiral of fear. Like, it almost took my life. Like, and that's not an exaggeration, but like alcohol and fear almost took my life. I was like a breath away from death at the bottom. And what happened for me down at that point, so I was not surrendering to the unknown. I was not moving countries because I knew because of a tree. I wasn't doing any of that. I was scared AF. Like, that's how I lived for a really long time. Like, if fear is a 1 to 10, I lived at like a 50, like so much a survival mode. And now I know it's just adrenaline and cortisol. I was stuck in survival mode because of the untreated trauma, and I was constantly terrified. And so alcohol stopped that. Benzos stopped that. And from that point, I switched. Once I got sober, I mean, drop an F-bomb here?
Go for it.
Okay, so my mentality became fuck fear. Like, that is really, like, literally what I told myself when I was September 29th, 2009 is when I got sober. So fuck fear became my motto, because I had nothing to lose because I was afraid of everything. And so from that point, it was like I hit a trampoline at my bottom and went the other way. And I kept doing like a word of the year, right? And it was courage, because I was so terrified. And it took me a while to stop having anxiety attacks because I was scared of everything. But eventually, you know, I just kept doing what scared me over and over and over and over and over again. And then it became like a thing. And like, now I didn't realize when you were saying that, I'm not afraid of the unknown. And I did fall in love with the mystery, but I did fall in love with the unknown. And I am cool with the feeling of fear in my body. And that's the difference between the downward spiral and the upward spiral of fear to like conscious creating. Am I willing to allow the sensation of buzzing through my body that actually is adrenaline and cortisol? Am I willing to allow that in my system if I am? Because that's the anxiety, fear, or it's courage. Because anxiety, fear, and courage are describe the same thing, which is adrenaline and cortisol. And so if I'm able to allow the chemicals to buzz through my veins when I'm trying something new, when I'm expanding my comfort zone, then I can expand my comfort zone and then it can keep growing and growing and growing. So I'm either expanding or contracting with my relationship with fear. That's like the journey. At least how I see it when we talk about the nervous system and growth. If I'm stuck in survival mode, if I'm afraid of everything like I was in 2009, there is no manifesting. There is no conscious creating. I am like freaking out and I'm staying at home. I'm agoraphobic. You know, I was afraid to leave the house. I was terrified. So I'm attracting more of that. How am I supposed to like visualize the life that I want from that point? Something needs to snap. Enough is enough. I need to have that breaking point where I can switch and then off and go the other direction. And that could happen at any moment. Anyone listening can decide from this day forward, I'm willing to feel the fear in my body. And then a life in that direction is the totally opposite way than the life drowning in fear. The life sprinting with courage.
I love that so much. And I know that you mentioned as well, we talked about this before that we started recording, those of you who really resonate with a lot of what we're talking about on here, Kirsten has an amazing, amazing course for you guys. And can we share it with them?
Yeah, it's called Digital Anxiety Pill. I've made this every year. I refilm it just because I get the feedback. And so I've been doing this. I first taught it 5 or 6 years ago at a sober woman's living home. And now I teach it at campuses in San Diego college campuses. But I put it online when I moved to Bali, and I've just refilmed it in December. So it's really short. Right now, it's just full of videos and audios, and it's, you can go to digitalanxietypill.com and check it out. Yeah. So, because to me, it's like, that's the difference between suffering and thriving, is knowing how to meet fear in the moment. If I can meet fear in the moment, I can do anything. If I cannot meet fear in the moment, I am fucked. Like, you know, that's, then my life is going to shrink, because we're either growing or we're either expanding or contracting. And it all comes down to, what do I do when fear comes? Knowing that fear will come. We have a nervous system, and those chemicals will be released. And thank God, because if a saber-toothed tiger is coming near us, it will save a life. If we're in a car accident, we can spin the wheel, it will save our life. We need those chemicals, and they're not going anywhere. But if I can meet that fear in the moment, and then so the question becomes how, which is what I walk people through in my course. I also have a bunch of videos on how to overcome fear, how to change your relationship with fear on my YouTube channel, which is Kirsten Johnson, or youtube.com/richerexperiences. So there's a lot of videos there too, just because it's possible. I didn't know when I was drowning in all that fear, 2008, 2009, that there was a way out. I didn't know what to do when fear came, besides try to shut it off. I didn't know that I could actually befriend it.
I love that you brought that up. And I think as we start to wrap up here, it really is, it's that process of, like we've been talking about in this whole episode, it's really getting to that place of loving and accepting all of it, including the fear, because that's a part of you. You're wired. You're humanly wired to experience that. And it's how you choose to experience it, right? Instead of trying to control it or make it go away or suppress it or make it wrong, you love it and you accept it and you befriend it, like you mentioned. And when you do that, oh God, how the doors open up. It's amazing.
Yeah, totally, totally. Lean into what scares you. Like, what a ride that is. Like, and that just means the doors just open. If I'm not afraid of anything, I used to be afraid of everything. Now, I mean, I'm sure, of course I have fear. Like, that's the human mind, right? But I'm not limited by my fear anymore. It's like, yeah, befriend the fear. Befriend. It's just a buzzing sensation in my body. Am I willing to have this buzz right now? Like, there's a buzzing through my veins. Like, okay, let's keep walking.
Amazing. Amazing. So for those of you that want to find out more about Kirsten, we're going to go ahead and make sure that all of her links are posted down below so you can check that out. And then as we're wrapping up here, is there anything else that we want to say or that you want to share with the audience?
Just came to my mind is that quote, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. Because it's, everything comes down to, I believe, you know, as a life coach and as someone who works with all sorts of people who are on enough is enough, they want to change their life. It all comes down to our mindset. And I don't think it's smart to run from your feelings, because that's not sustainable. But it's really wise to spend some time on a regular basis, especially in the morning, either journaling or visualizing the world that you want to create for yourself, what it is you want to, because that stuff's real. We dwell on what we don't want, but dwell on what you want. Become a vision. We're all visionaries, but become a conscious visionary. And spend some time hanging out in what you want to create, because that stuff will just start to appear. And it's just so fun to really take some control, to live consciously, to really visualize, like, where do I want to go? Like, my vision board was wildly different than my life. It was basically, I had a vision board of Bali before I'd ever been there. And then I went there and I'm like, oh my God. And then I did this mastermind retreat, and it was the same freaking villa that was on my vision board. I'm like, I just walked into the villa on my vision board. So it's real. Stuff is real. And so get really clear. Do the vision boards. Spend the time in the morning journaling. Write down what you want your life to be like for 5 minutes in the morning. When you do your meditation, follow it up with just thinking about, what does it feel like to be in this world I want to create? And then just be on that fun ride. Like, it's just fun. Like, oh wow, look at this. I just thought about, you know, I wanted to date a person like this. I wrote in my book about fake persona for a dude that I was dating. I masked his identity and wrote about, like, I made somebody up. And then the exact qualities that I wrote about this dude is who my next boyfriend was. It's so funny, because I was dating this guy. I'm like, wait a minute. He's like the character that I made up in my book. I like wrote all about this dude, and then there he is. It's like, whoa, I have a mind. Like, I have a soul in this body and this mind, and I can actually deliberately create, because we're creating no matter what, whether we're dwelling on fear. So dwell on what you want to experience. It's so cool.
Oh, I love it. Amazing. Well, thank you so, so much for hopping on this morning and spending the time to really just talk about all of this stuff. I know that for the listeners out there, I cannot wait to read and hear about a lot of the comments and what people have to say. So again, we'll make sure that we post all of those links down below for you guys, and we will be looking forward to seeing you on the next episode. Bye, guys.